Tonight we're going to look at Matthew, so you might as well get your Bible out, Leroy, and turn to Matthew 2 and just keep it because we're going to go through the whole chapter. We're going to look at Matthew 2. Remember, we're going through the chronological life of Christ. I personally had a masterpiece on Jesus visiting the temple at the age of 12, but no. Somebody wants to back up and do Jesus going to Egypt. So, you know, being the kind of person I am, I'll do that. So, there's a tremendous lesson. I want us to look at two things as we go through this story. Number one, where did we ever get the idea that there were three kings? And number two, no, the song came later, Sue. Got to help Sue out a little bit. And number two, which is the most important, why did God reveal to these three, quote, heathen about the birth of Christ? Why? Remember, we talked about in the last couple of weeks, as we go through the life of Christ, we're looking at the four Gospels. We're looking at Matthew, whose only biggest intent when he wrote his book was to prove to the Jews that this was the Messiah. Thus, we have the genealogy and we have all of these things. In this story tonight, we're going to see how Matthew kind of plays some little games with some of his quotations to make that point that Jesus is a Jew and is King of the Jews. Remember Mark? He just, everything's fast. Immediately. He doesn't care about the genealogy. He doesn't care about this story. He goes right into Christ's ministry and what he started from his baptism on. Luke was writing to the Greeks. So he presents Christ as universal, appealing to everybody. So therefore, that's why we have the stories of, you know, of all the things he did in all the different countries, because Luke is trying to say that Christ is for everybody. And John, who wrote his gospel about 20 years after anybody else, he just got to pick what he thought was important. And so that's why so tonight we're going to look at Matthew, and as we read some of this, keep in mind the whole intention of the book was this was to the Jews, he was a Jew, and that Jesus was the Messiah. Okay? Last week we did the dedication in the temple. The shepherds have already come and gone. You know, well, how usually when we see a nativity scene, how do we have it set up? Shepherds are there, the three kings are there. Well, as we'll see, the three kings came probably almost 2 years later. So they wasn't there together at all. So shepherds have come and gone. Jesus has gone to the temple for dedication. And now the next story, and Matthew's the only one that has this story, is what happens when Jesus is approximately 2 years old. Okay? Read away, Leroy. Matthew 2, start with verse 1.
After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews?"
Okay, let's stop there. Bethlehem. Can anybody tell me from the Old Testament any highlights of Bethlehem? Okay. Bethlehem is 6 miles from Jerusalem, so we're very, very close. Bethlehem is where Jacob buried Rachel. Bethlehem is where Ruth met Mr. Boaz. Bethlehem was the city of David. David called Bethlehem his town. And, of course, in Micah 5:2, it was foretold that Jesus would be born in Bethlehem. So what we have is we have these wise guys, wise men. They're off somewhere. We really don't know how many. Usually they traveled in a group. We assume there's three simply because they brought three gifts. However, it certainly wasn't unheard of that a group of 12 of them would bring three gifts. So we just assume there's three because of gifts. But as you read Matthew, it never says three. These were astrologers, most likely. Now, when we laid the foundation for Christ coming to this earth, remember we talked about in the fullness of time, Christ came. And we discovered what that meant was at this period, we're speaking the same language, Greek, generally. Roman Empire ruled the world, so we had a lot of continuity. Through Josephus and other people, we're told that not only were the Christians looking for a Messiah, but because the world was dark and yearning for God, a lot of the other religions were looking for a Messiah themselves. The Romans certainly was looking for a God. And every time they had a good emperor, they made him a God. But the heathen nations were also looking. So we can only imagine that the wise men, called magi in some places, they were students of astrology. And all of a sudden, they recognize that there's a star in heaven, something different. They've traced it back to where this could have been at around the same time as Halley's Comet. All kinds of scientists try to figure out what that was. We don't know. Who cares? But they saw something different. Now, the question I have for you tonight, what in the world made them think this had anything with the Messiah, King of the Jews, being born?
Well, he must have studied the Torah for them to get that, to come up with that.
Yeah, they had to study the Old Testament. Had to be, whether it was part of their religion or part of their philosophy, we don't know. But they had to study in order to recognize something was different. So they begin to follow this star, and they end up in Jerusalem. And what's the one question they ask?
Where is this king?
Where is this king of the Jews? Now, Herod the Great is the king. So we need to know a little bit about Herod because we're going to see what a crazy guy this guy was. Herod did a lot of good things. He was trusted by the Romans, built lots of roads, lots of cities, lots of infrastructure. But back then, kings were very paranoid. And they always assumed that people wanted their position as king. So as we look into history, we find out that Herod had his wife killed, had his mother-in-law killed, and had two of his sons killed because he thought that they were interested in taking over his throne. Herod knew, because he was a very hard man, that he was not liked. And so as he gets older, here's his plan for his funeral. He says, nobody will cry at my funeral. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take all the big leaders and people that don't like me, I'm going to put them in prison just before I die, and when I die, I want them all killed. So, there'll be tears flowing all through the city. So, this was his thinking. So, here we have the wise men. They show up in Jerusalem. And they say, where is this king of the Jews? All right, pick it up.
We've seen his star in the east and have come to worship him. Now when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed and all Jerusalem with him. when he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them, where is the Christ? Or where the Christ was to be born? In Bethlehem in Judea, they reported.
Okay, let's stop there. Now, do you get the picture? Here comes some foreigners, astrologists, wise men, teachers, philosophers, and they come into Jerusalem and they begin asking everybody, where is this King of the Jews? We followed the star and we want to know where he is. Did this catch the city of Jerusalem by surprise?
Appears that way.
A little bit.
Since they're stirred up.
Okay. All right. And then Herod calls his priests and scribes. And what question does he ask them?
Wants to know what their law tells them. Where is this king supposed to be born?
Okay. Were they stumped?
Didn't they say Bethlehem?
Oh.
They didn't?
Yeah. No, they wasn't stumped. They knew right where it was.
Yeah, you're right. They weren't stumped. They said Bethlehem.
Okay. All right.
It was interesting that Herod was disturbed, and so were all the Jewish people were disturbed.
Okay. Yeah. See, was that disturb a bad disturb or a good disturb? Don't know. You'll first lesson you learn in life is whenever something happens, what's the first question you ask?
Does this affect me?
How does it affect me? And so that's exactly what they did. Now, the interesting thing was is the priests and scribes had no problems knowing where he was going to be born. Boy, here came the answer. He was going to be born over here in Bethlehem. So, read the next.
For this is what the prophet had written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel.
Okay. Now this is Micah 5:2. So, in his gospel, why is Matthew quoting this text?
Give it some validity.
Remember, his objective to the Jews is that this is the King of the Jews who is going to fulfill prophecy. So, here he is. He's quoting prophecy. The wise men understood this. The priest understood this. Now, I got a question to ask you, and I think it's a fair question. How far was Bethlehem?
6 miles.
6 miles. How many of the Jewish people, how many of the priests, how many of the scribes said, we'll go with you and check it out? Doesn't that seem strange?
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't that seem strange?
No. The,
pardon?
Because these men who came were Gentiles.
Okay.
They would not think that the Gentiles had any valid information.
That's right. Okay. So remember, when we get through with this story, we're going to ask one question. Is why is the story and why did God direct the wise men to Bethlehem? So here we have, they know the answer. The community stirred up saying, is there a Messiah? Is there not a Messiah? Who are these guys? They quote the text. All right, keep going.
Then Herod called the Magi secretly. And he found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and make a careful search for the child. And as soon as you find him, report to me so that I may go and worship him.
Okay. Now, what do you think went through the wise men's mind?
They probably knew his reputation.
Well, they had a dream later on that
okay.
not to jump to take a different route home. But they might have believed him. I mean,
maybe they thought it was a turning point in Herod's life. So I think at this point, they had probably a little bit of validity. Even though they understood Herod, they understood his paranoia, his cruelty, but they probably thought, well, I mean, if this is the king of the Jews, why wouldn't you want to go worship him? So now we have the wise men going off 6 miles down the road to Bethlehem. All right? Keep going.
After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was.
Okay.
When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him.
Okay, let's stop there. Where was Mary and Joseph living at this time?
In a house.
In a house. See, so there was no manger. There was no wise men and shepherds. They've now moved into a house. So here comes the wise men. The star directs him. They see Jesus, and they're overjoyed. Okay, keep going.
Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream...
Okay, let's stop there. Now they give three gifts to Mary and Joseph and Jesus. That's where we assume there's three wise men. Notice, and it never says. It just says wise men. Okay. Gave him three gifts. What do you know about gold?
Valuable.
Pardon?
It's valuable. It has value. Oysters have value.
Okay. If you're in the Olympics, what do you strive to win? Gold. Gold is precious. It was more precious back then than it was today. So we find one of the gifts brought to Jesus is gold. And generally, this type of gift was set aside only for royalty. So we see that one of their gifts is given to royalty, what could be more royal than the king of the universe, the creator of the universe. What does anybody know about incense?
Expensive.
What else?
Fragrant.
Fragrant? What else?
Traditionally used in worship.
Very good. That's the answer I'm looking for. It was used in the sacrificial temple, used in the system. And remember, I always talked about that sweet smell going up to the nostrils of God. That was the frankincense that was used. So this gift was set aside generally to give to those that were priests. And then, what does anybody know what myrrh was used for back in those days?
Did they use it for anointing the bodies of the dead?
That's absolutely correct. Did you learn that from Enron? Well, he probably knew that. If he knew the first one, he knew this one. That's good. Yeah, it was used for embalming. Now, do you see the significance of the three gifts? For the king of the universe, gold. For a priest. What was the work of a priest? Pardon?
Teach the people.
Okay. What else?
He was an intercessor at that point.
Yeah, intercessor
to God.
Okay. Okay, not because God needed it, because we needed it. That's right. The definition of priest in the Latin I think, paints the best picture. A bridge builder. A priest is a bridge builder. So in the Old Testament, in the sacrificial system, which God gave only after they said, we don't want anything else to do with you. So he says, well, let's build a sanctuary. At least I can hang out there and you can come and know where I'm at. The priests were bridge builders. Why did Jesus come to this earth?
To do away with the bridges and deal with them directly.
Okay. But what does that make him?
Bridge.
A priest.
And what does that make him, by definition?
A bridge builder.
He becomes the bridge builder. He came to put together God and man. Now, what are we told in our day that we're supposed to be?
Priests.
Priests? So what does that mean we're supposed to be? Bridge builders. And we have to ask ourselves, when we present the character of God or the different things that whatever church we go to belongs, are we building bridges? Are we building a bridge between that person and God to help lead them to God? Or are we mired down into nice, great theological discussions and nice, great arguments? So we have the wise men bringing gifts to a king, bringing a gift fit for a priest. Now, why do you think they brought them the myrrh? What was Jesus going to do? What was this Messiah going to do? What was the end for this Messiah?
Death.
I can't see how this could be coincidence. They were heathen. Am I pronouncing that right? Good. Throw an R in there, I'd get it every time. They were heathen. They come to the people of God, the representatives of God on this earth, and they ask one of the most important questions that can be asked. Where is this man Jesus? And they don't care. Yes, ma'am.
Do they think they came from Babylon?
Don't think so. I think they think they came from countries that were... It was so long that I didn't care. Whatever the name of it was.
Because I wondered if they had some of the old writings that they knew.
Either one of two things. I think that God inspired them and led them because they probably had the inquiring mind and searching. I don't think God revealed to them and said, now follow this star. I think they recognized something. Remember, it's very important to understand that the world was looking for something. Sin had run its course. And the world was looking and they recognized something. And that's the way our Father works. When we recognize something, then He gets busy. Whatever that is.
Why didn't that star take him directly to the house? Why did they go to Jerusalem?
Because that's going to be my last 10 minutes. Because you are on the right track.
Is it just possible, but had it not been for those astrologers, that the entire Jewish nation would just let this all pass over?
We're going to get that in the last 10 minutes. Very good observation. Okay. So, here they were. They find him. All right, now keep going.
Having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said. "Take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child and to kill him."
Okay. So we hear, see, God doing what God does the best, protecting and caring. So he tells Joseph, go down to Egypt and hide out. Now this, why the way, was not new. Egypt at that time was a country where there was lots of Jews that would go. If persecution, if you were, you remember in the 60s, people went to Canada to get away from going to the army. This was where you just went and escaped to Egypt. It's estimated that the city of Alexandria had 1 million Jews in it. So this was nothing different than just saying, go on down to Egypt and stay there till I come and get you, because Herod is going to try to search out. So they pack up whatever they have. They take off to Egypt, and we find them down there. Okay, now keep going.
So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt, where they stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I call my son."
Okay, let's stop there. Now, this is a quotation from Hosea 11:1. "Out of Egypt I call my son." There's two ways of reading texts. One is always in context, which gives you the primary reasoning. And then a second one is, you could look for a secondary understanding of the text. Now remember, I started out this evening by saying that Matthew is working hard to say to the Jews that this is fulfilling prophecy. Well, if you go back and read Hosea 11:1, when this text was read, it's totally out of context to take and apply that verse to the fact that Joseph's going down into Egypt. Y'all understand what I'm saying?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Hosea 11:1 is God's pleading with the children of Israel before 722, when they were going to get wiped out by the Samaritans. And he's pleading with the children of Israel. And he starts out in verse 11, "I brought you out of Egypt. I taught you how to walk. I held you in my arms. I fed you. I took care of you. And you turn against me."
So, is it a dual application here? He's calling the children of Israel his son, as well as Christ his son?
I think it's a... I think that Matthew is taking the best case scenario he can use and using, quoting that text. It certainly cannot be taken as a primary statement. So, if one wants to... you know, it's the old thing is, you know, that in English, well... I got a D minus in English, and you'll see why in a minute, in a course where I wrote my major theme, which I thought, Enrod will appreciate this, I thought was kind of quite brilliant. I wrote a paper that says that the art of English is simply to communicate. And then for my example, I used some sentence with all the highest falutin words I could find, and said, if I use this sentence and it would be correct, the person would have absolutely no idea what I said. But if I said something and then I used the worst grammar I could use, and it certainly got the idea across. So you understood. So my major thesis was that the art of English is communication, so why are we hung up on all these metaphors? So then I took poems that were supposedly, you know, the tree represents this, and the river represents this, and the birds represent this. And my thesis was, why couldn't the poet be setting out an afternoon in the sunshine, playing a guitar, singing, and he sees a tree, and he sees the water, and he sees the birds, and he writes a poem about the tree, the birds, and the water. And yet we come along and said, oh, he was in great thought. And so the tree represents this, and you see what I'm saying? And I was quite good myself. And I got a D-, so I don't think the English teacher appreciated my creativity.
Lucky I got kicked out of school for it.
Well, see. So what happens is Matthew is certainly using a secondary meaning to a text that one could apply, but it's certainly out of context. But remember, he's trying to, for the Jews to prove that Jesus is the Messiah. Okay. Alright, let's get going.
When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious. And he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more.
Okay. Now here's another example of quoting Jeremiah that, again, is not primary in context because the deal there happened in that time, and of course there was great crying through the town. So again, Matthew very gently is reaching for a secondary meaning. Now, Herod understands that something's wrong. Remember, he's paranoid. He's crazy. He's hard. So he goes in and has the children, 2 years and under, killed. Question arises, in your mind, how many babies do you think were killed?
Thousands.
Well, this is in Bethlehem?
Yep.
It's a small place. But it said the vicinity as well.
But it doesn't say Jerusalem.
How many babies do you think? Got 1,000.
Bunches.
Pardon?
Bunches.
Bunches. Anybody else? Historians say 20 to 30. Probably 20 to 30 babies were killed. Town was small. How many 2 year and under are there? How many boys are there? So, now, if...
Word got out, I'm sure they'd run.
Yeah, so if you were one of the 20 to 30 families, this was an absolute catastrophe, obviously. You can't downplay that part of it, but it probably is 20 to 30. Babies, what they. The reason being, they've calculated what the population was and then taken Josephus and other people, and that's the conclusion they've come to. I always thought it was, you know, mass murder, but 20 to 30.
That's enough.
Pardon?
That's plenty enough to call it mass murder in my
Yeah, mind. Absolutely. Absolutely. See, that's why it's important to understand the character of Herod. I mean, he had his wife killed, his mother-in-law killed, his two kids killed. The Romans said of Herod, it's better to be Herod's pig than to be Herod's child. That was his reputation. Then he plans his big exit by throwing all the people in jail, and then when he dies, have them all killed so the whole town is crying, and when visitors pass by, they would say, oh, that Herod must have been a beloved person. So, I mean, how do you deal with a mind like this? So that's what's happening. All right, keep going.
After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt. And he said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel. For those who were trying to take the child's life are dead." So he got up, took the child and his mother, and he went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth.
Okay, let's hold there. All right. When Herod died, he was the ruler of the whole province. But when he died, he realized that nobody was as powerful as he was, and he was correct. So he divided up his kingdom into three parts. We got this guy that starts with an A, whatever his name was. We have Herod Jr., who's the one that beheaded John the Baptist. And then the third son is Philip. Now, when we get to John the Baptist, we're going to see the interplay between Herod and Philip. And in case you don't know, it was over a woman. So that's how John the Baptist ends up losing his head, because of these two guys. So Joseph doesn't want to go to the one that begins, what's his name?
Archelaus.
Yeah, that's good, close enough. Doesn't want to go there because he has a terrible reputation, just like his dad. So what God directs goes to Nazareth. Something you should know about Nazareth I thought was quite interesting. First of all, not a real nice town. Because remember, a little bit later on, one of the disciples says, I think it's Philip that says, "Hey, can anything good come out of Nazareth?" But it is interesting that Jesus spent about 28 years there. And if you looked at Nazareth, it's built on hills. And if you climbed up on the hill, on one side way, you could see the Mediterranean Sea. On another side of the hill, close to Nazareth, was a road that led from Damascus into Egypt. And this road was traveled by Joseph when he was put into prison. It was traveled by Alexander the Great. It was traveled by Napoleon in our day, and in World War II is one of the most important roads. So lots of caravans of people went from Damascus through this road. On another side of the hill was another road that was used strictly for the Romans. And they moved their armies up and down the road. Remember that when God put Israel in Canaan, it was in the crossroads of the world where many cultures, many people passed by. And it was God's plan that they would look at these people, see that they were different, ask why, and they could witness. I think it's very interesting, for 28 years of his early life, till he started his ministry, Jesus was in one of the most important towns in that area, the crossroads of travel from Nazareth. He could see the great caravans moving from Damascus. He could see the many cultures. He could see the Roman army moving theirs. He could see the Mediterranean Sea. I can't help but think that as Jesus saw this mass of humanity, and at the age of 12, understanding his mission was to save this mass of humanity, how it must have made an impression upon him to see all of these people going through the city of Nazareth. Next.
So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets. He will be called a Nazarene.
Okay. Remember, now this is an interesting text. Because where's the text in the Old Testament that says that? We don't know. We don't know. You can take Isaiah 11:1, which uses an old Hebrew word that means branch, and it's fairly close to Nazareth. So, you know, here again, Matthew's just working hard to get some points across. Okay, now, let's go to Mr. Doss's question, which, by the way, is the lesson tonight. Why did the wise men go through Jerusalem?
Well, it was considered kind of the headquarters of the Jewish people.
Okay.
Protocol, I imagine.
Pardon?
Protocol.
Okay.
The star leader.
The star
leader. Yeah. Why? Why didn't the star go right to Bethlehem? You know, it's kind of like Santa Ana and the Alamo. Why didn't Santa Ana just go right by the Alamo, wave at them, and go on over to Goliad and meet Sam Houston's army, wipe them out? We'd all be talking Spanish.
To send a message.
See, pardon?
To send a message.
Message to who?
To the people.
Hey, you want to come with me every Friday night? That's it. This is the first appeal that God is using to appeal to the scribes and the priests. The Messiah is here. They come into town. They say, a star's leading us. We're on our way to see the King of the universe. They knew it was in Bethlehem because they came up with the right answer. Herod knew, had enough sense to trust his guys that it was in Bethlehem. It was the first appeal, and sadly, it's the first rejection of the Pharisees and the scribes that Jesus Christ, the chosen one, the anointed one, the Messiah, is here. And they simply looked at it, and then they analyzed it, and here's the conclusion they came to. Well, we're not going down to that little floppy place in Bethlehem. Our king is going to be a royal king. And by the way, if we follow these three, if it was, these wise men who are astrologers, sorcerers, philosophers, heathen, what in the world would the Jewish people think of us? And so they looked at it and they analyzed it and said, couldn't be. Couldn't be. Because they would not humble themselves to sit and listen to something that was foreign to their thinking, because after all, they were God's chosen people. They were the ones who had it all together. They were the ones who knew everything. And then here comes three, if there was, three little guys who says, we know who's being born and where. And they wasn't even curious enough to say, well, let's go down there and take a look and see what the heck is going on. Pride killed them. And so God, in His mercy, and that's the way He works, He brought them right to Jerusalem. The wise men says, we have found, we know where the Messiah is. What bigger appeal could God give them? And they reject.
It shows you the danger of believing your God's chosen.
Pardon?
It shows you the danger of believing your God chosen in
Shows the danger when something comes along and you say, just because I didn't think of it, this can't be right. How about the people in Bethlehem? They had the same opportunity. Bethlehem, go ahead, Leroy.
That should really tell us today, and I say us, everybody, the danger of holding on to preconceived ideas that we have learned from Bible writers in the past, or even the preachers or what have you. It should tell us something.
Yeah. We always, God is always working, God is always appealing, and God is doing. Again, I've said it 100 times, so I'm going to say it 101 times. One of the most fascinating studies is take the New Testament and see how Jesus dealt with the priests and the scribes. He worked the hardest with them. And this is the beginning. At 2 years old, God's already working on them. Can't you see? This is the Messiah. The Messiah is 6 miles away. Go see.
What about the people in Bethlehem, a little town? Kids would be off playing, see these men coming, and probably old men sitting outside, like, because when we were in Bethlehem, that's what we saw.
Yeah. I mean, the town. Why didn't they respond? See? Because who would have thought the Creator of the universe would be born in poverty? If the angels in heaven were amazed, and they were, see, who would have thought? So you can see, here's a star, obviously it means something, and here's these wise guys coming in on their camels, rich guys, they had to be rich to travel like that, all of this, and you're sitting there in Bethlehem, and you just say, huh, just another day. So, first time God appealed to the priest and the scribes, and it's the first time that the rejection starts. Because we didn't think of it, must not be right. Okay, comments?
The shepherds that work the hills around Bethlehem apparently believed.
Mm-hmm. You see, the angels in heaven were amazed that Jesus was born this way. And they were amazed that nobody showed up. So they had to go tell somebody. So they found a bunch of dumb shepherds, just dumb enough to listen and come. God's waiting for people to come to Jesus, and nobody's coming, so He finds 3 astrologers over somewhere. Wish they had come from a country I could pronounce.
Mesopotamia.
Oh, I can pronounce that word. This was, I have trouble with English, so why would I want to go to a different word? See, He found them. God will find somebody. And yet they came. What a tremendous witness and opportunity Jerusalem had.
It seems like God sometimes uses parallels where, we're expecting His second coming. And we think we have the answer to that.
Yeah.
I just wonder if we're right or could we possibly be wrong?
Well, we just change our charts every 30 years. World War II comes and World War I came and everybody thought, well, this is it. This is the Great War. World War II comes. We keep looking for specifics. We keep looking for that sign, that one thing. The only answer is, let's look for God. We're called to be bridge builders. Jesus is one purpose for coming to this earth was to point and say, if you've seen me, you've seen God. This is what He is like. And that's our job, to be bridge builders. Lead them to God. Next week we're going to study on Jesus in the temple. And you're going to be surprised at what usually the main discussions were in the temple when Christ came along and wowed them. Because what they were discussing had nothing to do with salvation. And a 12-year-old says, I think we've kind of missed the picture here. God today is searching for you. God today wants us to be the messenger to lead people to Christ, to be bridge builders. We have the same opportunity the wise men. I found the Messiah. Let me tell you where He's at and what He's like. Father in heaven, we're so thankful that Ms. Walters bypassed the temple and asked to do this. It is a lesson of your caring and your love, your appeal. Here are the three men. They found you. Father, help us to find you, to love you, to respond to your love, and then take our fellow man. Become a bridge builder, leading to your love, your grace, your kindness. Thank you for these dear friends tonight. This is our prayer in the name of Jesus. Amen.